Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Coming up, Lav and I look back at a wild week in Austin and set the stage for the year's first men's major. Welcome to the Golf Central podcast presented by Callaway Golf. The new ChromeSoft XLS golf ball from Callaway is designed for max distance from low spin and tour level greenside control. It's gaining significant attention with the world's best players. And last weekend, Adam Svensson earned the first victory for ChromeSoft XLS at the Club Car Championship. Adam said, quote, "I'm proud to be the first and I certainly won't be the last. Love how this ball performs." And at the Kia Classic, Callaway was the number one driver brand with 41.7% of all drivers in the field. And Epic was the number one model by far with an impressive 42 total in play. Speaking of the LPGA Tour, keep an eye out for the major series stab bags that Team Callaway players will be using this week at the A&A Inspiration. Lav, I wanted to start this with us just doing our text exchanges again last week, just because I think
they're,
it's funny.
They're always epic. They're always way more entertaining than this podcast is.
Way more entertaining. But the best one, and look, I'm going to go on a diatribe here, and I'm going to let you clear the air first. Our brackets are not very good. I didn't do very good at all. You did slightly better. I'm holding mine up, waving this piece of paper, because I wanted to keep it just to kind of prove to myself how bad I was. I picked one player out of the pool play portion that advanced. That's one out of 16. Statistically, that's impossible.
I mean, we spent 45 minutes breaking down what I thought were perfectly reasonable arguments as to why certain players would advance out of their particular pods and then get through single elimination bracket. So you got one right. I honestly can't even think of who that player was.
I can tell you, I can take a little bit of pride in that. It was the winner, Billy Horschel. Now, I did not pick him to go all the way through and win.
And Billy Horschel was in whose pod?
Oh, man, I got to look that up. You ended up having five, right?
Is that right?
Can you remember all five of yours?
No, I don't. Although, like, when you look back at it, and I think the average seed of the advancing player from their pod was somewhere around 43, which is clearly a record. I mean, this was an anomaly. This was a statistical anomaly, what transpired last week. However, when you look through at, let's say, the top 10 players in the world, and keep in mind, there was just one top 20 seed who advanced. One top 20 seed advance. It was John Rahm, who I did pick to advance out of there. But like, when you look at the top 20 players in the world, there's only a handful of them that you would actually consider that to be a surprise, right? That they didn't come out. Like, we spent 45 minutes on this podcast breaking down who we thought, and I didn't go chalk by any stretch of the imagination. I just didn't pick the right quote unquote underdog to get through.
I mean, one top 20 player.
One top 20 seed.
And look, I understand we're going to sit here and have this conversation about match play and 18-hole match play, and anything can happen. And I certainly understand the cliche, and it came up a lot last week. That being said, one top 20 player advancing was unbelievable. Now, and I did want to touch on this before I'll fall on my sword, that, and I was having this conversation with a tour official, an executive in the airport leaving Monday morning, that it has become the best Friday in golf. It used to be the best Wednesday in golf before they tinkered with the format. And I still contend it is the best Friday in golf, because that was an entertaining day. When you have Sergio Garcia with an ace and a playoff to walk off.
It was entertaining because of the fact that you had some of these spectacular shots to close it out. And you had
Bobby McIntyre.
Robert McIntyre hit it to a foot and a half to close out his match.
And you had eight playoffs. So the old record, the previous record was five. And so I think if you factor all these things in, it's very, very good.
But,
that being
I actually hate the we can get into this. I hate the tie-breaking playoff because there's a couple of occasions where the player who lost their 18-hole match against their opponent ended up getting through the pod in the tiebreaker. I'm thinking in particular the Brian Harman Patrick Cantlay match. That was by far the best played match of any of them. You had I think Patrick Cantlay was 8 under. I think Brian Harman was 7 under, and Patrick Cantlay won 1 up or 2-1, something along those lines. So Patrick Cantlay won their head-to-head match. Patrick Cantlay ended up losing. They're both 2-1 heading into Friday, and then they have a tiebreaker. And what happens? Brian Harman wins the sudden death playoff. How is that possibly fair? I understand what the tour is doing in the sense that you have to keep the interest as long as possible. And if you just say, oh, the tiebreaker is going to be whoever won the head-to-head match, well, then you're going to have even more players on Friday who are just playing out the string and competing for $10,000 extra. So I understand why they're doing it, but I think you're getting into a situation where Brian Harman was not necessarily a deserving winner of that pod when Patrick Cantlay clearly played the best and beat him head-to-head.
How would you have them do it?
The tiebreaker has to be head-to-head. You already beat that guy. Why would you then need to go beat him again in a playoff where literally anything can happen because it could be one or two holes?
Well, no. I mean, we don't have this conversation on Sunday afternoon at a normal tour event when they've played 72 holes and two guys are tied and then they go to one more hole or two more holes, whatever the case may be.
Those guys didn't play head-to-head. What was the purpose of that match, the previous match?
I mean, you have to collect an amount of points. This is all about gaining points and putting yourself in a position where you can advance. And so I would argue, and look, I'm with you on Cantlay. Like, had that been a stroke play event last week, I think Cantlay probably would have won by 10 strokes. For three rounds, he was 14 under par. By comparison, Billy Horschel was 4 under par for those same three rounds. I mean, he played unbelievable golf. However, when the time came for him to go 3-0, he lost to Hideki Matsuyama, who wasn't playing well at all. So it sort of that's sort of the gotcha moment when it comes to match play. And I get that. Look, we can sit here and have that debate all you want, but there has to be some sort of payoff. I don't know how
the tiebreaker has to be who won the head-to-head match. It has to be. That's like, I know you think about my fantasy football playoffs, not as much as I do. However, this is like saying that the tiebreaker
Do you do a snake draft?
It's going to be an auction draft.
Yeah.
Everyone gets $100. An inside joke for people who are not following along. However, I forgot my train of thought. This is like in the fantasy playoffs where you have two teams going head to head, and then it comes time for playoff seeding. You don't just go play. You don't take four games off the NFL slate and say, hey, whoever finishes the best in this little tiny sample size gets the tiebreaker. You would say, hey, who won the head-to-head matchup previously between Rex and Ryan? Oh, Ryan won. He would advance. You don't just cherry pick. Oh, let's take the Niners Rams game. Let's take the Seahawks Falcons game. And whoever scores the most points of those, you guys go on. Because that's essentially what a sudden death playoff is. It's a very small sample size. You hit one bad shot in the playoff and you're not going to advance. So why would you not go back to the tiebreaker? I understand it makes it Friday more exciting. You now think it's the most exciting Friday in golf. I'm not sure.
Is it not? Were you not entertained?
What are the other contenders for that?
Any Friday on tour, pick a Friday. Any Friday will do.
I mean, Friday in most tournaments is a continuation. It's a buildup.
Exactly.
You're trying to crescendo.
Precisely.
You're trying to crescendo to Sunday. Yes.
Maybe Friday at the Ryder Cup would be a Friday at the Ryder Cup. Now that I think
okay,
about
yeah.
It. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, Friday, I would throw that one out.
Gonna win
yeah.
that one. Okay, so sure. So look, so this tournament now is crescendoing on, I would say, Friday afternoon and Sunday morning. Or Saturday morning. Excuse me, Friday afternoon. And Saturday morning. To me, those are the best matches. And then by the time you get to Sunday, everyone's just over it. And if you look at the history, you look at the history of this event since it went to pool play in 2015, they've been snoozers. They've been terrible. They've been absolutely terrible.
Even before pool play, this was the conversation with the executive in the airport, where I would argue it is, if not it's the number two best Friday in golf. However, it always begets the worst Sunday in golf. And this is no disrespect to Billy Horschel or anyone else who made it to the final four. And this has everything to do with the quality of golf. Billy Horschel even said in his post-round interview that, apologize to the fans. Yeah, that wasn't great golf. Between the two of them in that final match, they made exactly two birdies, Scottie Scheffler and Billy Horschel. And I saw the conditions in the morning. I was walking with the groups. It was difficult. Winds gusting to 35 miles an hour. It was cold, quirky golf course. Wasn't playing great golf. Totally get that. The afternoon was sunny. The wind wasn't blowing near as much. It was warm. That was just bad golf, man.
So what's the solution here? Because you had...
Oh, there is no solution. It's match play. I mean...
When you think at the totality of this tournament now, and you don't want to be a prisoner of their moment and just look at what happened in 2021 and make rash decisions. But you look at what happened this year with the one top 20 seed. You look at the average of seed advancing being 43.4. In the Monday Scramble column that I do every week, I looked back. If you look at the top 10 players, I know how much you love stats. You look at the top 10 players in strokes gained tee to green over the first 3 days. In other words, tee to green, those are the top 10 players who are hitting it the best. They are playing the best golf. Only two of them, Robert McIntyre and Kevin Kisner, who I think we could all agree were deserving players, advanced. That's it. Two of the top 10 players, strokes gained tee to green, advance. In other words,
you're just coming up with a statistical way to describe match play. That's all you're doing. And I'm not going to argue with this. I mean, it's obvious.
This format is not identifying the best players. That's
why we only do it once a year. Like, I didn't get the questions last week from a lot of reporters saying that, should we do this more often? No, of course not. This is a one-off. Let's do it once a year.
I saw people saying the PGA Championship should move to match play.
No,
like it used to be.
No, in the Olympics. I mean, everyone sort of pounded their chest when the Olympics went straight stroke play, 72 holes, because that's the way you determine a champion.
It is kind of dreadful, though. I mean, that feels like a missed opportunity.
But again, if they go match play, then you and I are having this exact same conversation later this year. It's just you're sitting in a hotel in Tokyo instead of sitting in a hotel in Augusta, Georgia.
That's why there has to be a solution. There has to be a way to improve the format. So you're just going to throw up your hands and say, this is as good as it gets.
I don't think it's broke. No. I don't intend to find an answer because
you
I don't
think this is broken.
I'm not. No, I don't. This is match play. We didn't just discover that after 200 years, man, match play is really not kind of fair. Like you end up in a situation where that's probably not the most deserving champion that we ended up with. No, it's always been this way. Ever since they started hitting balls in Scotland, I just think that right now people are going to dissect this. And I think this is a one-off. Enjoy it for what it is. I don't think the players are complaining about it.
They're not.
No.
They enjoy this pool play.
Not necessarily the pool play. Most players that I talked to last week.
Yes, that's the problem. Pool play is the problem.
No. Well, here's the deal. Most players, and Ian Poulter was sort of leading the charge on this, and I certainly see where he's coming from. Ian's take is he would just do straight knockout. If you ask the majority of players, I think they would just rather do straight knockout. All right? They just want it to be the way it was before. But they also understand why they invented pool play. They invented pool play because they don't like the idea of the stars going out on Wednesday afternoon. This way they guarantee Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And in theory, if you give, you always used to be talking about Tiger Woods. So if you gave Tiger Woods three rounds instead of just one round, he'd probably have a better chance.
The cream's going to rise.
Now, that didn't happen last week. And statistically, as we've just mentioned, it was almost impossible to figure out how last week played out the way it did. And I think some of it might have to do with scheduling. I mean, let's be honest, with the Masters a week away, I don't know that a lot of players were really grinding. I mean, I watched Dustin Johnson play that final match. I don't think he was trying to kill himself to advance.
I really wish the event could move. I think it's perfect in like October. I think it's a perfect October tournament. But 2 weeks before the Masters, it's tricky because you're right. I don't think you can go back to straight knockout just based on its position in the calendar. You're going to have a situation where Dustin Johnson, this is what he's banking on for 3 days of play to get fully prepared for his Masters title defense. He's not going to go there to potentially play 14 holes and lose, and all of a sudden he's sitting there with a week and a half of nothing to do. I don't think you can do that. That's why, Rex. That's why I have a solution.
Oh, this would be fun.
I have a solution. And I know you're a big fan of amateur golf, and you follow it very closely, and you have intimate knowledge of all the players and the tournaments. So this That's is right. basically borrowing from like a combination of like the Western amateur and the U.S. amateur. And so this proposal would be 54 holes of stroke play and then knockout match play over the weekend for the top 16. And the reason why I think that that is the best way to do it is I've got about four or five bullet points. First one is that you just mentioned it keeps the stars in town for at least 3 days. They are guaranteed to play 54 holes over those 3 days. Secondly, since you love now Friday, you think it's the second best Friday in golf behind the opening day of the Ryder Cup, there are going to be some playoffs in order to reach the weekend. You're not just going to have a clean cutoff for the top 16. It would be highly unlikely. And so you're going to have some players who need to do something special in order to get in. I like that. Third point, and we just touched on this, the best players would then, like the top players, be best positioned to advance through that medal play. Because over 54 holes, just like it does in a regular tournament, those who are playing the best are going to rise to the top. We see it every single week on the PGA Tour. That's just how it works. You can get fluky for a week, and you can get or for a round, and you can get hot, or you can have a stinker. But over 54 holes, yeah. If you're playing decent and you're a top player, yeah, you're going to be among the top 16. In other words, you're going to have an insanely strong bracket after 54 holes of stroke play, right? You would have a stronger bracket, yeah. In stronger bracket than just this average seed of 43. And the best part, you're still going to have match play on the weekend. You're going to have four matches, round of 16, quarterfinals, semifinals, championship match.
I'm not arguing with this. Me? I've heard this.
Who's with me?
Wow. I guess I would be with you because I've heard this pitch before. I know the tour actually considered this model before they went to the pool play. I'm not quite sure why they decided to go with the pool play version. It probably has something to do with just the idea. The name of the tournament is match play. So they kind of wanted to stick with what seems to be working.
Call it the hybrid.
So far.
Call it the hybrid match.
And here is my problem. And you clearly wanted to do this, and I wasn't prepared for you coming at me like this with all of these ideas, and it needs to be fixed, and let's tear it down and start all over again. Because I know you are, but here's my problem. And I spent all last week sitting beside a certain Australian reporter who works for PGAtour.com. I'm not going to name any names, Benny. However,
probably crestfallen that Adam Scott wasn't playing against Cameron Smith with Mark Leishman.
Jason Day got knocked out
in the consolation match.
Yes, it was a terrible week for him. But he has this sort of harebrained idea similar to yours. It has more to do with these higher and lower seeds. And if you're in the top half of the bracket, you get a bye, so you wouldn't play until Thursday. Anyway, it's a very complicated and convoluted. And so he spent the last 7 days just wearing me out about how this would be better.
He's been talking about this since 2013 in Dove Mountain.
And I've had it. I'm up to here with Benny's ideas. And I tried to tell him that every time he would come over to me and open my mouth, and I would throw things at him because I'm like, Benny,
he's got a stupid little notepad and he's showing off, and there's little pods and brackets.
And he said he's run it by the top players. I don't even hate it. I don't even understand it. And I don't want to care about it. Because again, this is 1 week out of the year that you're sitting here trying to reinvent by adding something called stroke play to a match play event. I just feel like we're trying to reinvent the wheel here, and it's not as bad as you're making this out to be.
I don't think
or anyone else.
I don't think pool play is working.
Maybe not. And look, I'll be the first to say it's very, very confusing. I'm sure the fans aren't sitting at home trying to figure out how many points does this person have and what do they need to do on Friday to advance. It's very, very complicated. And I think eventually they're going to have to get to something. And I like the idea of doing the 54-hole stroke play. You're right. That's what all the great amateur events do. The U.S. Amateur used to be a major. The British Amateur used to be a major. So they were proven commodities. I don't know why it got cut short in that process. That being said, where I really ran into a wall last week, and look, I'm going to go ahead and do it right now. And Victor Perez, he should have won the match play. Victor Perez is going to be, not only is he going to be on that European Ryder Cup team, he's going to be the star of that European Ryder Cup team.
He's going to go 5-0.
And you know what? He's going to partner with Antoine Rosner because those two are Frenchmen, and they both played well last week. And I just, here's the deal. They're going to put what I said on this podcast on the wall of that room. And I'm going to be the motivation. I'm going to finally go down as motivating the European tour the way Alan Shipnuck did 2 years ago in Paris.
And yet you continue to disrespect the French, because his name is not Antoine Rosner.
Rosner.
Of course, his name is Antoine Rosner.
Rosner, yes.
You just continue to poke the French. What have the French ever done to you? We had a great time at the Ryder Cup in 2018. A terrific
time. Nothing. And I don't know if you've had an opportunity to talk with Antoine. Probably not, because he hasn't been on tour very much. He is a breath of fresh air. He is so much fun to be around. Like, next time you have an opportunity, any opportunity, just a random Wednesday, and he's walking around the tour event, make sure you go up and talk to him. Like, he is something special.
So this is apparently the first time that you've gotten to see Victor Perez up close and personal after all of your slander over the past 6 months. What were your impressions of an absolute mountain of a man?
Mountain of a man, and I was scared to death because he's got these big bare hands and he just kind of walks around, and it seems like he's going to just walk over to me and break me in half and throw me in a garbage can. You're the guy, one that says I wasn't going to make the Ryder Cup team.
I mean, the guy doesn't use a glove when he plays golf. So if he can hold that corded golf pride grip just fine, imagine what he could do to that scrawny throat. He would just crush it to death if he ever hears this podcast and the way you've been disrespecting him now for months.
I mean, a lumberjack doesn't wear a glove either. That I equate those two things together. And he's a brilliant golfer. Look, he played really, really well. He came up short in the consolation match to Matt Kuchar. But yes, he's going to be on that Ryder Cup team. He's going to be on that Ryder Cup team alongside Lee Westwood. So I'm going to quit making predictions about who's going to be on what team.
Yeah, they're definitely going to be on the team. And I think you pair Victor Perez, he's good friends with Sergio Garcia, who we actually beat in the match play event. I think pair those two, pair him with a veteran. I think he could really do some damage.
Okay, we got to be short this week because we got a lot of things going on trying to get ready for the Masters. Next week, you are actually in Augusta National already for the ANWA. What's the scene like up there?
Rex, we're there for the first 3 days at Champions Retreat, which you and I had a chance to play before the November Masters about 5 months ago. I think I dropped 4 birdies and an eagle.
Yeah, that was painful.
It was a terrific round.
Sure. A lot of fun for me.
I'm sorry. What was it talking about when I wasn't gloating over my round that eventually became a 78? Oh, yes.
Don't let your job as an analyst and as someone who actually talks about golf get in the way of your gloating. Go on.
Yes. So the tournament starts on Wednesday. I had a practice round today, so it was good to catch up with a lot of players who, honestly, I haven't seen probably now for a year and a half. You got to keep in mind the NCAA championship last spring was canceled because of COVID. We've been doing most of our shows that are college-related remotely. So this was a chance to catch up with a lot of them. It should be really competitive. There's 5 to 7 players who are just absolute studs who you're going to see on the LPGA one day. And now, Rex, are you gonna ask me about a very special round that I had earlier this week, or is that not going to come up today?
No. And we need to make it fast. But I do want to ask, but I only want to ask in the context of on Monday, and I don't want to give this away, but I'm going to. On Monday, I had to call Seminole Golf Club, which is, of course, one of the greatest spots in American golf. And because I wanted to get the results of the member pro and I kind of do a thing on golfchannel.com about it. And the phone rang and rang and rang. And then someone finally picked it up and it said, "Hello, my name is Bob Ford." And I thought to myself, like, how am I going to do this now? Like, Bob Ford is a legend in the business. And the only thing I could think to ask him was, "Mr. Ford, don't you have something better to do than answer phones right now?"
He answered his name. He answered his full name.
Yes. Yes. This is Bob Ford. How about that? This is Tiger Woods. This is Bob Ford.
Hello then, Bob. Bob actually had the pleasure of seeing me sky a 9-iron to about 15 feet yesterday. I was on the fifth hole, I think, the par three or fourth hole. He strolled up in his cart. So yes, I played Seminole on Monday.
Humble brag.
That's not even a humble brag, because there's nothing humble about it.
No.
I played, and to be honest, Rex, I played pretty damn well.
What'd you shoot?
Played.
Go ahead.
I shot 82, and I honestly, I don't know how I could have played better. I three putted six or seven times, which I think is like a it's like a badge of honor.
That's a good average at that golf course. Yep.
Two of those three putts, unfortunately, were on par fives that I had hit in two. I was putting for eagle on two par fives and walked away with par. I missed one green, with the asterisk being one green that wasn't in a bunker. So I think I hit like 10 or 11 greens, but like, so since you haven't played there, I'm not sure about this humble brag. So since you haven't played there, it's actually
Before you go on. Yes, I have.
You have.
That's right.
Well, what did you shoot?
Not 82. I don't even remember what I shot. I played.
You think you broke 100? There's no way. Yeah. There's no way.
No, I actually played it on a very calm day. Like, I'm sure you had wins, and every time you play it, you have wins. But I played with Gil Hans. And so for me, it was almost like I was so distracted by Gil.
Did Gil break 82?
He might have. Gil can play. I don't think he broke 82, but I'm sure he shot somewhere in the mid-80s. But for me, it was like this class in architecture as we walked around and he pointed and talked about all the different things. You know, this bunker's
that'd
here.
That'd be very distracting.
It was distracting, but I totally enjoyed it. But keep going with your humble brag now that you realize that you're wrong.
So actually, I'm curious to see, did Gil say, and look, I am not a golf course architecture geek. I'm not going to be joining the fried egg. Is it a situation, Rex, where it's generous off the tee, which is what I thought it was, even though I managed to lose a couple balls, but the second shots are insanely difficult because they're Donald Ross greens, right? And so they're already small targets. There's false fronts and there's runoffs left and right. And then almost every hole is playing into a crosswind. And so what is already a very small target is made minuscule because of the wind. That's what I found to be really challenging, is that the targets are so small. And of course, if you're playing a 20 mile an hour wind and you miss hit it at all, it just absolutely eats it up. That to me was the challenge, and the genius of the golf course is just how precise you have to be.
No, and I think most players I've talked to, because you know the Seminole Member Pro is probably one of the better fields of the year on the PGA Tour, if you look at some of the names in it, and they'll say the same thing. And they never play it without a crosswind. I mean, it always seems to be howling there, the degree of difficulty, but it's a special place.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you played it for the upcoming Walker Cup. Please give the payoff.
Yes. Yeah. They're not inviting me to be a member anytime soon. I'm never going to get to play the golf course again. But they do have the Walker Cup there the second week of May, which should be a great event, with another stacked American team.
All right. That'll do it for this week's edition. We'll be back probably on Sunday, right? I'll see you at Augusta.
Yeah. Drive, chip, and putt. I'll be there. Drive, chip, and putt. Do a couple of Masters preview stories. And of course, our,
Palmetto.
Our annual match at Palmetto.
That'll be it. We'll talk to you next week.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway,
and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.